Black. Hi, Susan. How are you? Okay. Let's see. Where's Rick?
Do you want me to go see?
Well, he might not be coming until later, so that's fine.
Okay.
I was just gonna. Okay.
Or Deb, I can have Deb go see if you want.
Nah, that's okay. That's right. There you are. Did you get those already?
Yeah.
Did you have those? Okay. We're good to go then. Thank you, guys. Leslie really liked that paperweight. Yeah, thought it was pretty cool. I guess she collects them. So. All right. It is 6:30, so we'll go ahead and get started on the December 11th East Bay Charter Township Board of Trustees meeting. I'll call the meeting to order, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, good evening, guys. Sue is out sick, and so we'll want to appoint a board shall appoint one of its members as the temporary clerk to that meeting. The Charter Township Act. So, you guys want to, is there a motion to appoint somebody or somebody volunteer and we'll make somebody the temporary clerk? Don't all jump at once. I know you're excited about this opportunity.
I make a motion that we appoint Mindy as temporary clerk.
Okay. I'll support that.
Okay. Motion's been made and supported to have Mindy act as the temporary clerk for tonight's meeting. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Sorry, Mindy.
Thanks, Tracy.
So we probably should have done that after the roll call, but, you know, we'll go with it. So, Ann, would you do the roll call attendance, please?
Walters.
Present.
Merrill.
Here.
Henschel.
Here.
Lyle.
Here.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Friend.
Here. Okay, we have the agenda in front of you presented. You will note that, that's okay, we have regular consent calendar items, then under business before the board, township administration with the 2018 blanket vendor logs, the resolution for meeting dates and times for 2018, leave donation policy, public hearing for the Meadowlands Industrial District for and then moving on to Photo Dawn for an industrial facilities exemption, a public hearing on the fire prevention ordinance. So we've got Brian here and Pat Parker here for that. And then we go on to some planning issues with the zoning amendment and then into assessing. You'll note that after your packet came out last Tuesday, I think it was on Thursday or Friday, some things were sent to you. Those were the Michigan Association of Planning Health Planning Technical Assistance Grant. That was something that came in late. I think it was like the day of or the day before the Planning Commission meeting. So we had information for that on there. Vacation policy as far as rolling over vacation, that's added as well. The Minolta Biz Hub, that's the old printer, and then a private road name request. So if I would like to add those. Vacation policy right after the leave donation policy is 1D. Moving on to the technical assistance grant from Michigan Association of Planning, if we can move that right after the zoning amendment, say 5B, because Rick will be able to answer any questions on that. And then the disposal of the BizHub printer and the private name road name request, if we could move to 7 and 8. Does that work for the board? Are you okay with those? Does anybody have objection to adding those? Okay. I'll also note that some other information you received after that is related to the first agenda items that you received was an updated resolution 2017-27 with the corrected June date. That's the 2018 meeting dates. The leave donation policy. Also, a clean copy of that was sent out to you. There was a copy with the markup in your board packet, but a clean copy went out to you. And then the poverty exemption information, that didn't go out with the first packet because we had a Department of Treasury bulletin that we wanted to review and make sure we weren't going to need to make any changes with that. But we didn't need to, and so that went out on Friday for that agenda item. Okay. So, if we're all right with the agenda, we will move on to conflict of interest. Does anybody have any conflict of interest with those agenda items? Okay, we'll move forward to public comment. Now's the time for public comment. It's their opportunity to address the board on any item. You have 3 minutes. We have a whole list of rules. I won't bore you with the rules. I don't think that we'll go over them or anything like that. But if you would like to address the board, you're welcome to step up to the podium, introduce yourself, and let us know what's on your mind. Don't be shy. Okay, seeing no public comment, I'll take the opportunity to let you know that it is Rick Brown's birthday today. He has, am I allowed to say your birthday? So, he has graced the earth for 6 decades. So, I said to him earlier when he was, you know, still 59, just the days leading up to it, I said, 59 and counting. And he said, can I have a recount? So, anyway, happy birthday, Rick. There you go. There you go. There's always tomorrow. Okay, correspondence in your packet. Kind of correspondence report. You'll find that you received information from the DPW on septage information, as well information from Tim on EMS 9A. That he has 2 more Monday nights that he's in class downstate. And then Metro as well sent over some statistics from Pat. Anybody have any questions on any of those, or we'll kind of move right into reports and you can ask Pat or so forth. Okay. Well, let's see. I don't think that we had any reports up here with the board. Mindy, as she mentioned, was absent at the last Planning Commission meeting. So we will go straight to Karen. Do you have anything more for the ambulance? I know Tim wrote a note, but if you want to share anything with us. Okay. All right. Thank you. Metro. Pat?
Good evening. Pat Parker, Metro Fire Chief. I'll try to be brief. On your table there, I included the incidents for the month of November. Kind of gave them to you in a little different format. The ambulance calls are on top. 42 ambulance calls in East Bay Township, and I divided them out between priority 1, 2, and 3. Priority 1's being the highest at 29 calls. And you can see down the left side all the different calls that we went on. Including some interesting ones. Fire calls on the bottom, 20 fire calls, and again listing the incident type. In the latter part of November, we did have a fire on Potter Road, and I'm sure you all saw our campaign that one of our fire department installed smoke alarms actually saved that family. 4 people got out, so it's so hard to quantify all of our fire and life safety education efforts. And you know, when the statistics look good, you can say, oh yeah, it's because of fire education and prevention. But you know, this one was a true save. A lot of kudos go out to Chief Belcher for really pushing this program. Year to date, we are at 4,429 calls, and that's about 85 over last year. If you go in the mall right now, you'll see that we have a kiosk there, and we're actually, it's two-sided. One side is carbon monoxide, and the other side is fire alarms. So the mall's been gracious enough to let us put all of our materials there, and we staffed it over the weekend on Saturday and had a great turnout there. Our fire inspectors are busy, with finishing up all their big boxes and doing all the alarms and generator tests on that. If you've been going down South Airport Road, 31 North, you'll be seeing the billboards. And we actually partnered with Traverse City Fire, and we have billboards up reminding people that if you have live Christmas trees, to make sure you water them, and also not to overload your circuits. Overload your stockings, but not your circuits. So it was a great, great education efforts there. Our tech rescue team spent time in the tunnels below the commons, and that was quite interesting to be below ground and actually doing some confined space training. We have some ice rescue training planned for January, so I'm sure with weather like we're having today that we're going to see some ice. And then lastly, we're going to be delivering Santa to Station 8 in Acme on Friday night. So if anybody needs to get a Santa fix, you can be at Station 8. I believe it's going to be actually across the parking lot in the Masonic Lodge, but that's where we're going to be. Do you have any questions? It's been another great year. We thank you for your support, and hopefully we'll have another great year in 2018.
I just wanted to mention to the board, you should take a lot of pride in that call where the smoke detectors saved the four lives. That's something where, you know, the Metro puts a lot of time and effort with Brian's department. I can only imagine how the firefighters who installed that feel, because just as board members who support the program, to read that and you're just thinking, you know, what you're doing. Sometimes you don't see that direct impact, as you mentioned.
Right, it's hard to quantify. Well, they were actually installed in 2015, and while we were inside the house, Chief Belcher said, you know, those look like our bases. And sure enough, we have a phone app, and got on there and saw that they were installed in 2015 and knew the two people that installed them. And those two people actually are pretty pleased, you know, to say that. Because these guys, they don't like knocking on doors.
No.
And hey, can we come in and look at your smoke alarms? You know, they say we're not Kirby vacuum cleaner salesmen or firefighters. But, you know, when you have a save like that, it helps it helps in our efforts. So, anyway, thank you.
And we also have a special Metro board meeting next week on Thursday. It's at 1 o'clock at Garfield Township Hall.
This Thursday.
Yep. This Thursday. Yeah. It has to do with the station leases. We wanted to get those taken care of, and we thought it was important enough to have a meeting prior to a regular board meeting. So East Bay Township, as you know, has already approved that lease. It's signed.
So is Acme.
Okay, and Acme Township. So they're both signed and over with Metro. And so we will meet with them. I've been in contact with Peter Wendling, and he feels like the lease is a good option, as he gave us that recommendation. And again, as this was drafted by Metro's council. And so we're good to go, and we'll be at that meeting. So, all right. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay, I talked with Brian Souza today, and we really didn't have any agenda items per se that were specific to engineering. So he had Monday night off from Elmwood Township, and I said, why don't you take a Monday night off from East Bay as well? We had just had all we had with respect to engineering was the two payments with the sidewalks and the tank repainting. So he said he'd send over an email as the status of where we're at on those, which is pretty much finished up, but... Okay, the Grand Traverse County Road Commission, did I see Mark?
Yeah,
okay. How are you doing? How are the roads out there?
I see.
They are.
I can tell you, going to five counties, it's the same everywhere. Difference is, we got a little more
sand. I talked about something. She might be a little late.
Okay.
Mark McKellar with the Grand Traverse County Road Commission. As you had alluded to, the roads are kind of dicey. This is probably our first real impact, and you know, give the trucks a lot of leeway and drive accordingly. And that's why I'm late. I just took my time and I left not on time. So, but Thursday, this coming Thursday, I know you just mentioned you have a meeting at Garfield Township. Paul, it is our Thursday night is the first East-West Corridor work study session. And you'll never hear, other than my saying, you know, it's not absolutely a bridge, because we have to look at the whole dynamics of the region. It's changed a number of years. A lot of the materials that were out, that were developed through Grand Vision, some of the studies are rather dated now. And, you know, we can use them as reference points, but not necessarily apply it to today's environment. This area has grown rapidly, as we know, and 5 or 10 years ago to today is significantly different. So what we have is an engineering group coming in. This is open to the public. I am actually not going to be able to make the meeting as I'll be out of town, but I'd encourage you to attend. It is on our website for the specific time, but it is Thursday evening. It is a working session. I don't believe there'll be like public comment and all that, but of course our chair will probably allow the public to speak if they would like on the matter. But it's just kind of like to meet with the engineering group, get a scope, know where we got to start. We got to start somewhere. What I will tell you is going to be very different with this one is they're recommending engagement with the public at the onset, which I am all in favor for transparency and getting public input on everything that's going on with it. And also the environmental impact studies will be done on the front end. Those will be discussed, not after you put all the money and investment and get down the road and then there's an impasse on that. So, but the environmental impact will be studied as to each suggested corridor crossing. It might be kind of the existing system we already have, or it might be a total new crossing. So, and as many of you know, Castro Bridge is now open and will remain open. It's done. It's ready to go, and we're pleased. The motoring public seems to be enjoying that access through onto that side of town. So, I did mention that we're going through some changes with our asset management plans, and we're developing more. And then lastly is that it's kind of odd, but this is an off year. We will have no new commissioners in January. Everybody that's seated is going to be seated. There's not an open position, and it'll be the following year when there would be, I guess it would be 2019, would be a new commissioner, possibly two, but I know for sure one. Yeah, one. So there might be a change in the guard, but it'll be a year from now. So other than that, I don't have anything else to report. Just be safe, be careful, and give the trucks plenty of room. Any questions? I'd be remiss if I didn't say this. Thank you for your cooperation this last year, you and the residents, in terms of looking at the special assessment districts. And we're hoping that when the snow's deep in January and it's very cold, we'll get a different response from the contractors on the bids. Generally, we do. So they know they probably just had enough and they didn't want to, supply and demand. So, but, petroleum prices are stable, which is good because that's a lot of the asphalt cost. And then, they'll be looking at the whole thing. Again, Jim Johnson going to put that out, I think, right after the first year.
And thank you to him, too, because he did a lot of work helping the township with that through the special assessment process.
Yeah.
Jim Cook and Jim Johnson. So
good team. We've got a really good team. We're lucky to have them. And we are recognized throughout the state in terms of some of the initiatives we're doing. So, and also the legislation that's going through lightning speed down there on OPEB and pensions will have limited impact on the Grand Traverse County Road Commission, as we are not fully funded, but our OPEB is almost non-existent, so we don't have any liability there, and it's in a rapidly declining manner. And then our pension itself is stabilized, and last I knew, we were almost 70%, if not higher, funded on our pension, and have been for a few years. So we're trying to make inroads even to get that point. But it was 20 years of boards moving towards that position. It doesn't happen overnight, but you got to start somewhere, and I appreciate the hard work of previous board members, countless board members that made hard decisions all the way along the way, so that it didn't have to be like the last minute chop, it's done. I don't want anybody to think, oh, no, the road commission's going to start having financial issues. We're not. We're solid on that. And we're willing to share that advice with anybody who wants to listen how we did it. So, we'll leave it at that.
Okay,
so.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, Park Commission. I think Deb Lannon is here. Hi, Deb. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good.
Deb Lannon, Park Commission. We don't really have anything to report. Our most burning issue right now is we're looking at Arbutus 5 and some improvements there, and we've got some plans on that. Anyone have any questions?
No, I will mention to you and to the rest of the board that Conservancy has reached out to the township, and we've had a couple meetings on some just properties that they were looking at in East Bay Township. It's very preliminary, so as they move forward, they know the process of going through the Parks Commission and then through the Township Board. So I'll let you know as that kind of moves forward.
Thanks.
Great.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Okay, and then Glenn, you said that we may have a county commissioner here, but they may be late, so that's fine. We'll go on to the consent calendar. Ann, do you want to cover the consent calendar?
Sure. The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent calendar be removed from there and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses on the agenda is approved by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. Tonight you have the board minutes from November 13, 2017. Check register summary, check numbers 13464 through 13525, paid in the amount of $100,512.28, with check number 13462 voided. Emergency fund, check numbers 3705 through 3724, the amount of $21,460.87. In the receiving fund, check numbers 2515 through 2521 for $215,268.58. Escrow fund, check numbers 1513 through 1524 for $6,754.03. And there were two payrolls, October 29th through November 11th, check numbers 6087 through 6094, and it totaled $38,672.06. And that included $7,054.95 for payroll tax and $1,045.80 for the state of Michigan. The payroll dated November 12th through November 25th, check numbers 6095 through 6099. $34,491.16 and included $6,164.13 for payroll tax and $911.40 for state of Michigan. Total payroll was $73,163.22 and the total amount paid $417,158.98. We have budget adjustments 2017-101 through 2017-113. And approvals, H1, U.S. 31 North Sidewalks Engineer Certificate for Payment Number 3, Job Number EBT-342302C, and H2, English Woods Tank Repainting Engineer Certificate for Payment Number 3, Job Number EBT-342402C.
Okay, does anybody on the board wish to have anything removed from the consent calendar? Does anybody from the public wish to have anything removed from the consent calendar? Okay, we'll bring that back to the board. Is there a motion or any questions or a motion on the consent calendar?
I make a motion to approve the consent calendar as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, that motion's been made and has support. We'll do a roll call vote, Ann.
Sure. Bartlett?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to number one, Township Administration. What's that? Carol, did you just walk in? Hi, Carol, how are you?
I think I
are you sure? Okay, all right. I just want to get through. I know Jean has another meeting to go to, so I want to kind of get through this and we can get to Jean's agenda item. Okay, all right, great. Thank you. Okay, so we'll do agenda item number one. We have four items within this. We have the 2018 blanket vendor logs. We have the resolution on the meeting dates and times, and a leave donation policy and the vacation policy. Well, it's fine with you guys. We'll just kind of take these one by one. The blanket vendor logs you have in front of you, we've actually condensed these down. There used to be like an A and a B. We've condensed that down and actually put the line items right on the blanket log with it so that there's not two. So your first one is with respect to the township. The next one is emergency services. And the last one you have in front of you is the metro and police services. Does anybody have any questions on these and or a motion to approve them for the 2018?
I have a question.
Sure.
On most of the line items, that, at least on the township one,
mm-hmm.
and on the emergency services, there is a, I assume it's more like a not-to-exceed amount in the total amount.
Right.
But there's several that don't have anything.
Right.
Leah, collection services, and banking services. Is there something that we could put a cap on those? Or
I think that, like, for example, with Leah, it's a contracted amount, so it would be according to our agreement. Let's see what other one. We have the state of Michigan. Tracy, you might be able to handle these. The state of Michigan is, those are payroll, correct?
Yes.
So that would be per the payroll amount. Let's see, what else have we got here? DP
collection services and banking services.
Banking services.
Those are all as we use them. Banking services, we don't typically have any service fees because we use our balances to offset those. And the collection fee is charged directly to whomever we're collecting it. So it's a wash, but this way, if it's a blanket, we don't have to wait for a board meeting to pay those invoices that come in.
Right. I was just wondering if maybe we could put a not-to-exceed lump sum cost on at least some of these. I understand, like the state of Michigan is going to be, you know, but, you know, Leah, we have a contract. We know about how much it is.
Sure. The DPW and then the accounts receivable, those are based on the contracted amount. They're based on the budgeted amount. So, yeah, we can go back and take a look at that. I'd like to go ahead and approve. Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Just wanted to put in something in here.
Sure.
Since we do have our budget,
you know,
that we should be able to put something in there.
Yep.
We have most of them for the emergency services, but for the police services, we don't have anything in here.
I'm not sure if they had that on the last one or not, or if that was added by virtue of trying to combine the two different. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
But I can definitely get you clarification on that.
Okay. Do you want a motion separately or together for?
I think we could do all three of them together. Okay. So what we're looking for then is a motion to accept the 2018 blanket PO logs for the township, emergency services, and the Metro Police Services.
I'd make that motion and with the notation that we'll get back the
follow up on the amounts.
On the amounts.
Okay.
I'll support it.
Okay. Motion made and supported to approve those blanket PO logs with the follow up information. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed by no? Okay. The next thing in your packet is a resolution 2017-27, and this is the meeting dates. It has been updated. It had June 12th in there, and that's actually June 11th. So I think you did get the updated copy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've cleared all of those dates. I'm sure Sue went through the calendar and made sure they didn't conflict with holidays and so forth. So we're looking for If you don't see any conflicts with those dates or any errors on there, a motion to approve resolution 2017-27.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2017-27.
Okay. Is there support for that?
I'd support it.
Okay. There is a motion to approve resolution 2017-27, which establishes the 2018 meeting dates and times for the Board of Trustees. Can we do a roll call vote on that resolution, Anne?
Sure. Henschel?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to the leave donation policy. In your packet, you had a marked up leave donation policy and then a clean copy sent to you. This is one of those policies where I think it had a great purpose why they put it in there. I think it's needed. I think in through the usage of it, you see where the good parts of it are and where some of the shortcomings are. I think that wherever the original template was from did a really nice job in covering a lot of bases and some of the particulars on how you make the donation, how you solicit a donation, and all of those things. I think the recommended suggestions really just pertain to two things with this. The first is changing the terminology that it used to have. The purpose was for paid leave for life-threatening medical conditions. So when I looked at this policy, to me that meant only donated leave for specifically something that was critical at that point in time. I'm suggesting that we change it. Now, I still would like it to be only in extreme cases that we use this. We don't want to get to a point where we're exchanging and donating leave and that sort of thing, and I'm not suggesting that, but I would like to change it to paid leave for medical conditions due to a life-threatening illness. And the reason is because when you have somebody who has a critical illness and they have to take some time off, they also, when they come back, will sometimes have significant either therapy or follow-up surgeries where they are not necessarily considered in a life-threatening situation. And so this just clarifies a little more, still makes it a very rare condition in where you would implement this or use this policy, but allows for a little bit more latitude in following up on some of those long-term medical needs related to that critical illness. So that's the first part. And then the second part is, as you'll see under eligible circumstances, the second bullet point had that the employee must have exhausted all forms of the paid leave. Now, while looking at this policy, that would, you know, when this was being passed, that would have sounded a perfectly logical policy to me. The implementation of it, though, what I've seen or heard rather of happening is that employee exhausts all of their leave for their life-threatening illness, and when they come back to work, they basically have no leave then, for which if they have follow-up doctor appointments or any recuperation and so forth that's going on. So this would allow them to hold back before they accept the donated leave. This would allow them to retain some of their leave so that when they come back, they still have some. And in that case, you would likely not need more donated leave later. So, is there questions on this, comments? We've had some, like I said, without going into too many details, we have used this policy. So,
my only concern is that the person with the life-threatening medical condition can have 80 hours left, but the person donating only has to have 40.
And we can adapt that as well. So you're right. We can either be consistent with them and make them both 40 or both 80. Although if somebody would donate it and then had to leave 40, I mean, if they only had 2 weeks, it probably makes sense to change it to 40. But I don't know. Any other thoughts on that?
I think it would be up my assumption is that the person donating would be healthy. Of course, it, you know, some catastrophic thing happens. It's unknown to anybody, but that would, I would think, would be up to them. They'd know their need or their requirements. Because if some of the jobs in the township, you know, they work different schedules than just an 8 to 5 or 7 to 5:30, so their time off may not, the requirement for time off may not necessarily need to have vacation time. Because if they work a 24-hour schedule, then their days off they can schedule so that they have respite time. That makes sense.
The other thing of just looking at this, I was noticing, is in the person who donates the leave, it says they must maintain a minimum balance of 40 hours. It's a finite. They have to have that much left. The part where you're designating an amount for the employee who is capturing it, it's, they may retain up to 80 hours. So it is flexible there, too.
I just know that in not just the one instance that we've used the donate and leave, but as we've had several people that have had longer times that they've had to be off for medical reasons, when they come back, if they have exhausted everything, there's still times when they absolutely feel like, I just can't get out of bed today, but they push themselves to because they don't have any time off available to them. And I think that deteriorates their recuperation just as much as the main illness did.
Well, again, when you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, we have to remember this isn't your average illness or the flu.
This is
specific life-threatening illnesses. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I guess the question I would have is if somebody was off sick and nobody donated, they used all their time, they'd be coming back without any ill.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sure. You can't stop that from happening. I mean, we're not mandating anybody donate anything. This is volunteer.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody may not feel comfortable asking for donated leave. You can see there's a process in place on they have to approve asking for it because you don't want to convey any information that they don't want conveyed. And that happens sometimes too. People have something come up they don't want to share with coworkers, and that's fine. So, any other questions on this policy? Okay. Well, is there a motion regarding the policy?
I would make a motion that we approve the revisions to the leave donation policy 10.13 as presented.
Okay. Is there support? What's that?
Does it go beyond 10.13? No, it's just 10.13.
Yep. Is there support for that motion? Okay.
I'll support it.
Okay.
Sure.
I just want to offer one clarification, and that is, just so you guys know, I think it comes across in there, but the definitions, that second paragraph that is deleted, that's deleted solely because you don't need the defining. When we eliminated the term up above, you don't need to define it later in the bottom, so that's why that's taken out. Okay, there's been a motion made and supported to update Personnel Policy 10-13, Leave Donation. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no? Okay. Thank you very much. We will move forward to the second item.
Flush.
And This is vacation policy. So currently the township has a use it or lose it policy, and that's not necessarily a bad policy. I mean, it encourages people to use their vacation time, making sure that they get to recharge their batteries, so to speak. As you can see here, it says there was a report that showed that 84% of the employees with use it or lose it policies take all their vacation time off. You do not have that was the, in the late editions.
This the is the one that was position. On your desk because my
too. Oh, here, let me give you that. Should be it's in the very back. The late editions are on the very
back. It's in the printout that's out there.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. It is. Okay. Do you see that? Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
I saw it earlier, but that won't work.
Okay.
I guess I'll share hers.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this was emailed to you, I think, Friday morning or Friday afternoon. Sue emailed the late editions out. Again,
with the financials.
And with the financials and the late additions. Again, we have a use it or lose it. So basically, if employees don't use their vacation time by December 31st, then they lose it. Like I said, there's a good rationale for doing that. But at the same time, you don't want to have a lot of companies years ago used to roll over a lot of time, and then when somebody retired or left, you had a liability in place where if you had a policy where you paid for that. What I'm suggesting is, so we add a little bit of flexibility for the employees, is to allow them to accrue from year to year, but only a maximum of 40 hours. So basically 1 week's vacation that they could flip to another year. Additionally, the way the terminology reads, it reads full-time employees may accrue 1 week of vacation from 1 year to the next with a maximum of 40 hours of vacation time accrued at any one point in time. So basically, you couldn't accrue this year and accrue next year and accrue next year.
Not compounding.
Exactly. And also, part-time employees do not accrue vacation. If you look at the schedule, they have limited amounts of vacation, and so I'm sure they would use that within a year. So it just adds a little bit more flexibility, particularly people who do things that are outside or whatever, which is fantastic for the employees who are weather-related things. Vacation times and opportunities may change, so... this has been something that I think would be beneficial for the employees. I think that they would appreciate having that flexibility, and it wouldn't really change anything or cost anything for the township. Any questions on this? Yeah.
So you're not going to run into this with an employee getting a week or two vacation because they're going to use it. This is more for the people who's getting 4 weeks vacation.
In all likelihood.
Okay. If they can't use 4 weeks vacation in a year, how are they going to use 5 weeks the following year?
Well, 3 weeks of vacation as well. I mean, you know, they may roll it over may always roll over 1 year. I don't know. But
okay.
The other thing is, as well, is if you plan to use your vacation all toward the end of the year and then something happens that's work-related that you can't, or it's better not to take the vacation. It allows you not to configure your vacation so you're timing it out at the end of the year, and then if you can't take it on the days you planned, then you lose it. So it adds a little bit of flexibility in there where if someone planned to be off and you need them to do something, then you can roll it to the next year. See what I'm saying? If they had 20 hours left and guess what, this meeting came up or training opportunity, well, they wouldn't be able to do that because they would lose that vacation. This would, again, offer that flexibility. And it's not, you know, very much time. Again, it's not, we're not rolling 2 weeks or half their vacation or anything. So you can see, too, there's some info in here that It's actually less than 20% of organizations that have a use it or lose it policy, at least according to this one report that I quoted in here. Society of Human Resource Management found only that 8% of organizations allowed to roll over an unlimited amount of vacation time. So obviously that's not a popular policy at all either, and that's not what we're proposing. It shows that 55% of organizations offer a vacation rollover policy with a cap on the number of days to be rolled over, which is exactly what we're talking about here.
And the 55%, how many of those are government or taxpayer-paid agencies?
You know, Glenn, they didn't break it down to that.
Okay.
But there's the source. You can always take a look and see, but I didn't see where they broke it down.
Okay.
Any questions or a motion or discussion on this? Okay, well, I will make a motion to amend the vacation policy to allow the, as proposed, to allow the accrual to 40 hours of vacation from 1 week to the next for full-time employees.
Support.
From 1 year to the next?
From 1 year to the next, yeah.
Support.
Okay. That motion's been made and supported. Is there further discussion or questions? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no?
No.
No.
Okay, we'll do a roll call vote. I think we just have two, Henschel and Lyle, but we'll do a roll call vote.
Let's see, Friend.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Henschel.
No.
Lyle.
No.
Hartley.
Yes.
Okay. We are up to agenda item number two, the public hearing for the designation of the Meadowland Industrial Park. So let's see, we have with us tonight Gene Dorenzi, Jim Schmuckel, and you have documentation in your packet regarding the public hearing that it was noticed. You have the addresses that were noticed, which is the entire Meadowland District. You also have the October 31st packet from Gene, which you saw in the last meeting, and Resolution 2017-28, which establishes the Meadowlands Industrial Park as an industrial development district. So it is 7:17, and we'll open the public hearing for this industrial development district. Is there anybody here who would like to address the board regarding establishing the Meadowlands Industrial Park as a industrial development district? Okay, seeing no public comment, we will close public comment about 30 seconds later. So we will bring that first. Jim, do you or Gene have anything to add on this? Or, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Or if you'd like to go ahead and make your way up this way in case the board has any questions. Let me ask the board real quick while they're coming up. Do you have any specific questions for Gene or for Jim regarding the establishment of the Industrial Development District? No? Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Jean Dorenzi. I'm the Community Development Director for Grand Traverse County. And in November, we presented the overall packet, which is in front of you, and we looked at the new assessment, which is approximately a little over $1 million for Photodon, and new jobs created is 5, and retention is 10. And instead of just looking at the empty parcels, this board said, let's look at the overall industrial park. So that made sense, and so we didn't have to establish it parcel by parcel, but looked at the overall park, and it provides a really focused incentive to the township to hopefully get new investment in that industrial park and help that infrastructure that is there to get that public-private investment involved. So I think it's my recommendation is based on the private investment that we approve a three-year abatement, which is approximately a $30,000 abatement over a three-year period, or $10,000 per month, and that is state and local taxes total.
Okay.
I'm Jim Schmuckel, and I'm co-owner with Dave Prevo of the Meadow Land. We developed this, I think, some 53 years ago we started, I believe. Maybe not. It seems like that long when you're paying on mortgage and taxes. And we had about 7 years of nothing happening. So now we do have the activity, and we certainly would encourage this to be passed because we think this is an asset to the industrial. And actually, of all the real estate right now, the industrial market and the businesses are some of the best part of our interest at this time. So anyway, we appreciate your cooperating. And on a different matter, if anybody would like to donate a week or two of vacation time, I would be willing to take it. $75 a week. So, thank you.
All right, thank you. Gene and Jim, we really appreciate you being here. So this is done kind of in the process of there is a public hearing, as you know, we just had. We need to, if we go forward with this, pass the resolution which establishes the district. You do have the resolution in front of you with the corrected date on it. It was just one of them said December 12th instead of December 11th. Let's see. And then we'll move forward after, if we choose to pass that resolution, we'll move forward to looking at the resolution for Photo Dawn and the agreement. Right. So any questions on specifically this resolution or a motion?
I would make a motion that we approve Resolution 2017-28 establishing the Meadowlands Industrial Park as an industrial development district.
Support.
Okay. Further discussion. Just to let you know, all of these documents also went through Peter Wendling as well. So, okay, we'll take a roll call vote on that. Ann? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the notice to the taxing jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this really doesn't matter, but I was wondering why, are there 5 units at 781?
Oh, they notice not just the units. I'm sorry, I'm assuming your question before. They notice not just the units that are in the Meadowlands, but also those within the 100 feet, too.
My question is 781 Industrial Circle, mm-hmm. Unit 1 through Unit 6.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a 6-unit building?
Yeah, there's separate offices in it. Correct, Jim?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, there's multiple offices in one of those buildings.
They're all independent units.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other further questions? Okay, we'll do a roll call vote, Ann.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Henschel.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Friend.
Yes. Okay, we will, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Gene. If you just want to stay there for a second as we go through this stuff with Photo Dawn.
You thought you were leaving.
So the next item on our agenda is the application for the industrial facilities tax exemption industrial facilities tax exemption application. That is the resolution in front of you. Again, you have the one with the corrected dates. This would be a resolution that would be passed, which refers to the agreement as well.
And, Jean, again, this is for 3 years?
Yes. There's a scoring sheet, mm-hmm. and we had a score of 25. Mm-hmm. And you can go from 3 to 6 years with the recommendation of 3 years because it is on the low end of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're recommending 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. I know I looked at this, but is it on the real and the personal?
It's on the real property.
Just the real property.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm just looking in this resolution. This a lot of this is templated, but I guess one of the things I would have probably added was just the authorization to enter into the industrial facilities tax exemption agreement, which is not specifically on here, but what I think we can do is just offer that
in the motion, right?
Motion. Yep. Yep. So, Don Bash is here, correct, from Photo Don. He's here as well. If you have any specific questions, the resolution 2017-29 and the tax exemption agreement are the two things that we would need approved if we were going to move forward with this. Discussion or questions? What's that? Sorry, I thought there was a question over there or something. Glenn, go ahead. What?
I'm trying to find, were we supposed to have had all of the packet with our stuff? Because the score sheet and everything, I don't find.
The score sheet wasn't in there. I just talked with Jean about it, and she has the updated score sheet.
I'd be happy to share that with you.
I don't have the updated score sheet either, but I know their score indicated 3 years, correct?
Yes. You can do the personal property or the real property.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. I thought you had, it was a couple of pages.
Just one page.
Okay.
It's just one page. You can do it.
So you can, it's the, so we have jobs created, jobs retained. So it's the low end of each of the points, but the investment that they're making is over $500,000. It's over $1 million. Gave it a full 10, and on the real property as well, I gave a 5 instead of a 10.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
What does this do to the emergency service special assessment?
There is in the original packet. I think you had that in there, didn't you, Jean? On the tax, on the effect of the taxes,
yeah.
It should be in your packet, Glenn.
So, and Susan is here, but on special assessments, that it's my understanding that those are not abated mm-hmm. with special assessments.
So it wouldn't affect.
It would not affect special assessments.
Yeah.
You'll see your attachment B for the real property tax estimate.
Jean? This personal property items for tax abatement application form, is that what was used for the private investment for personal property? Or I'm missing something because I only come up with that's only $118,000 versus over $500,000.
Are you in attachment A?
I don't know where I am. I'm in 6B.
Probably part of the overall application.
Yes.
On the
and I think it goes back to
that I gave you.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the personal property items.
Right. So on the score sheet under personal property, I'm wondering if I'm missing something because it's scored in the $500,000 to $2 million range.
So on personal property, I am not recommending any abatement. So I took what they're going to buy, what they have, they're going to be adding to, and what they currently have. So that's even though they got points for it, when you look at the industrial on the duration, I'm not giving any points for personal property. It's only real property that I'm giving points for. So even though it's scoring high, Mindy, I'm recognizing that they are making investment in personal property, but I'm not recommending any abatement on that.
And their request is for a 3-year in the real property.
Yes, on the real property.
Mm-hmm.
So I took what the new investment that they're going to make and what they currently have. So I added it to make it up. But I'm not giving them any abatement on the personal.
Okay. Currently, we have three IFTs for real property in effect right now, and four for personal property. Those are for Grand Traverse Container. You'll probably remember these. Grand Traverse Container, Frontier Computer Corp, and Electro-Optics. And then there were some personal property ones for Dynatech, which is Lead Screw, Grand Traverse Container, Frontier, and Auto Owners. Mm-hmm. So those are the, we generally have a few that are in effect. Okay. Let's see, I would make a motion to approve resolution 2017-29 and authorize the agreement. Oh, I just lost my sheet. And authorize the supervisor to sign the industrial facilities tax exemption agreement.
Support.
Okay. Is there further discussion, Glenn?
Can you clarify that for 3 years and not 6 years? Because the score sheet says you go up to 6 years from 25 to 49 points.
The
and they got 25 points. I just don't want anybody to come back down the road and say, well, we should have give it to them for
it
6 years.
It actually says that in the agreement.
But would you put it in your motion, please?
It says it in the agreement.
Then don't put it in your motion.
We can put that in the motion. But would you like me to state the rest of the portions of the agreement? Or we're good? Okay. So we'll make a motion to approve resolution 2017-29 and the agreement with the note that it's a for 3-year agreement. Okay. That motion is made and supported. Further discussion? Okay, it's a resolution, so we'll do a roll call vote. Ann?
Friend?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Hartwell?
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Jean, so much for being here tonight. Really appreciate it. Be careful out there.
Thank you very much.
Jim, Don, thank you for coming to the township. We appreciate you operating here in the township and wish you the best of luck. Okay. All right. Move on to item number 4. It's a public hearing for the fire prevention ordinance. Brian, you are up.
Okay. So the proposed ordinance is just an update to the 2015 International Fire Code from the 2012. Really aren't any huge significant changes, just some little things that may now appear in the international code that previously were in our ordinance, sky lanterns and things like that. So it's pretty much just a renewal and update to the new version of the International Fire Code.
Okay. Kind of a simple thing. I apologize. I don't have an ordinance number. I was assuming Sue would be here. I don't know what the last ordinance number we passed.
29.
There's a resolution.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. So.
I don't know either.
Okay. So we'll just pass it. I don't think we did it. Did we do an ordinance?
We have an
last?
Ordinance last, last meeting.
Yeah. But we can number it the next ordinance number.
Yeah, I can get with tomorrow or whenever.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Anybody have any questions?
I think so.
Okay, you had
actually I do.
Sure.
The special event section where it's
provision shall not apply to private functions not open to the public held entirely on non-commercial private property?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. 4 of 7.
Okay. So basically, the section that applies to special events, like the tents and things like that, if you want to put a big tent in your backyard and have a wedding for a family member, then the code, and we're not going to get involved in that, basically, is what that means.
Right. But what about commercial property? That's like, say we want to have a bonfire at Roy's after a buck pole or something.
Well, they may be able to get a permit for that. That wouldn't fall under necessarily the special events. I mean, it could, depending on what the nature of it is. I guess it would be hard to figure out exactly where that example would fall, if it's a special event or if it's a would fall under the burning ordinance, depending on what they were going to do. But yeah, so if Roy's is going to put up a tent and have a farmer's market on Saturday, and the tent meets the provisions that are within here, then they would have to get a permit from us and get it inspected. Mm-hmm. But there, we did add changes to the tent section where we're less involved in that now. In the retail tents. So
didn't you talk about at the Metro Board meeting if a tent is something that they normally typically sell things in?
Yeah, and we put some size provisions on it too. I can look that up real quick.
Yeah, it was quite substantial.
Yeah. I don't have my glasses, so I gotta step back here. it's 3,600 square feet. So, you know, that's a 60 by 60 tent. So if somebody wanted to put up a 60 by 60 tent and sell what they normally sell within their business, then it would not necessarily require a permit and involvement from us. A good example is Art Van. They have tents up all the time. And we go there, and it's such a simple inspection. And we charge them for it, and it takes our time. And you know, it's a canopy with no sides, with some couches in there. So there's really not a huge fire hazard, and really doesn't require our involvement as much. But if Art Van was going to put a huge tent up and sell, and do a farmer's market that's going to be full of people, or you know, they were going to sell fireworks or something like that, then we would be involved, because that would be outside the purview of what they normally do on that property, kind of thing. So
as long as it falls under the purview of their normal course of performance, you do not have to have a permit.
Yeah, along with those other conditions, yeah. Yep.
Now that's for Metro. That's
not
a
zoning
issue.
Yeah, right.
That's
different from zoning.
Yeah, it's just from us, from the tent permit part of things, yep.
But if someone has a historic course of performance, say every 5 years they do something like that, that would substantiate a history of behavior for that organization, how would you validate that?
Give me an example, I guess. So
about every 5 years we do put up a big tent out there, and we do have a sale that goes on.
At
Roy's. That's just the example. Okay. Or any place else that you have a private,
so,
commercial.
So it's like a sale that you guys do of your normal.
It's just an example. I'm trying to grasp why we would need something that was a private function on someone's private commercial property that was open. Because it's defining what a commercial activity is at that point.
Well, what we're if it's a private function, it's not open to the public, then we're not going to get involved in it.
But there are private functions that are open to the public, such as garage sales.
Right, but
That's
not a commercial property. If it's a commercial property, the ordinance and fire prevention code apply to it. And if you're open to the public. That's really what the fire prevention code is all about, is protecting the public, mm-hmm. You know, from any hazards or anything that could happen, because they don't necessarily know of the hazards that could be within a building. So they're assuming that they're entering a safe building if they're going to go shopping. But if it's not, you know, then they're subject to the dangers that are associated with that building, if that makes any sense.
It does. It does. I'm just trying to grasp. I work in different nonprofit areas, and so if, you know, besides Roy's, I'm envisioning now having to get a permit, like if I wanted to use Grace McDonald Park, I would come in for a use. And then if I want to put up a tent, now I have to come to you guys for...
Well, you've always had...
Yeah, okay.
But now, if it's...
I'm trying to figure out
if it's
change.
If it's open to the public and it exceeds that 3,600 square feet, then yes, you would need a permit. If it's for retail sales...
Okay. As a commercial activity, though. Not as just an event. Because it's under special event.
Yeah, but it says non-commercial.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted that clarified. Thank you so much.
Did I answer your question?
You did. Thank you.
I know it's clear as mud. I'm sorry.
Okay, other questions for Brian? And sometimes, too, like when you read these as well, sometimes like, shall not apply, shall apply. So you're always
and sometimes
doing the, yeah.
There's double negatives, and you got to
exactly
scratch your head trying to figure out exactly what they're talking about. Yeah,
sure.
Code stuff is.
Sure. Any other questions for Brian? Is there a motion regarding... Oh, I'm so sorry. This is public hearing, and I have neglected to get... So I have your information and questions from the board, but let me get the public's input. It is 7:41, and so we will open the public hearing regarding the fire prevention ordinance that was published in the newspaper. If there's any member of the public... who would like to talk to us about the fire prevention ordinance, you are welcome to step forward and let us know your opinion. I know we have a couple students who have a burning need to let us know what they think on the fire ordinance. Okay.
You scared me.
The pun started at 7:30, and it's because I work with Rick. Exactly. Okay, so we'll close. Hearing none, we'll close that public hearing, and then we'll bring it back to the board. If any other discussion, step right up. If not, if there's a motion.
Did we figure out what the last number is at 29?
No. That was the resolution.
We
so
do not.
It'll be the next 2017 dash the next subsequent number. We'll
and
go
I would on. Make that motion to adopt fire prevention ordinance. Let's see, we've got ordinance number 2017-, the next number, the fire prevention ordinance, which updates and replaces any previous and existing fire prevention ordinance.
Okay, is there support for that motion?
I'll support it.
Okay, we have double the support. So, Anne, you can pick either Bartlett or Morrow. We'll do a roll call vote on that.
Lyle?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Inchel?
No.
Friend?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Brian.
Sure. Thank you.
How many more township boards do you have?
One.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on to the zoning amendment, accessory dwelling units. With the birthday guy, Rick. We know that you've been waiting for six decades to present accessory dwelling units on your birthday.
Zoning Amendment 1-17 is a proposed amendment to add accessory dwelling units in East Bay Township. This is something that's been discussed at the Planning Commission off and on for over a year. The only reason it didn't come to you sooner is short-term rentals kind of got in the way, and they decided, you know, we'll deal with one hot-button issue at a time. And so they're leaping from the frying pan into the fire now. So we had a couple of public hearings on this one early in the year, and then they put it off to the side while we worked on short-term rentals. And then again in November, since it had been a while since we had discussed the topic. And basically it makes some adjustments to the existing part of the code, and then it makes some additions to the code. What it essentially would be allow accessory dwelling units in certain specific locations in East Bay Township. It would only be allowed in the LDR, MDR, HDR, which are low, medium, and high density residential, and the East Bay Corners districts, where there is water and sewer available. And then there's some other criteria. Some of the other criteria is that, and part of the reason we wanted in those locations is it's within the designated growth boundary as well. But it'd be a limitation of one accessory dwelling per parcel, whether it be standalone or attached to the main dwelling, they're allowed one. The property owner must reside on the parcel, no absentee landlords in this ordinance. They cannot be used as short-term rentals either. We have a minimum size of 250 square feet, and then there's a maximum size that's based on a calculation on the zoning ordinance. And then it's supposed to be architecturally harmonious with the principal dwelling. The purpose of this is to try to provide additional options to residents in the township or people moving to the township for affordable housing. That's one of the biggest points that was made during the master plan was affordable housing. It certainly is a major topic of conversation throughout Grand Traverse County and the region is affordable housing. And the Planning Commission felt this was a great way to provide an option for property owners to consider. It is a fairly common question we get, probably once or twice, once a week, maybe twice a month at the worst. We'll get a call from somebody interested in having a mother-in-law apartment or a granny flat or a place for a rebounding child or something like that after school, coming back to live with the parents or something like that. And so they're looking for some way to do that without having to go out and build or buy a completely separate dwelling somewhere. So the Planning Commission discussed this and back at their November meeting and then voted, I believe it was 6-0, to recommend approval of this to the board. We've provided a cover memo. We've provided a draft copy of the ordinance as well as the resolution/ordinance to adopt, and then also included comments from the county, and the county was the county planning was also supportive of this proposal. And I'll be glad to try to answer any questions you might have.
Go ahead, Glenn.
I guess the one question I have, and I think I read it, but I just want to clarify it. They will have to purchase a water and sewer benefit for that unit, correct?
Yes.
I know it said they need approval from the DPW, but I wasn't clear when I read it.
Yes. But, we even added the definition of REUs or equivalent units to the definition section as part of this to address that as well. Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Tracy?
Yeah, I just had one, and maybe I'm just not understanding it. But it said the requirement that the ADU be only permitted in the parcels with public sewer and water. But then I went down to section 205E, and it says applicant for an accessory dwelling unit located outside the township growth boundary.
That's a good catch.
That was conflicting to me.
Right. That's a leftover from an earlier version that apparently none of us caught along the way, except for you winning the grand prize tonight.
Well,
So
I'm assuming that there is no way to get an approval to have an accessory dwelling unit outside the growth boundary.
That is the intent, and I'm glad you caught that because that should come out of there, yes.
Okay. And then I had the other question that Glenn had about the REUs. So a little bit more on that, though. So if it's a primary residency, then they have to, if they just have someone moving into their basement or something, they have to then purchase additional REUs, even though they're not changing the number of bathrooms or bedrooms in the home?
If it's being treated as a separate dwelling unit, yes.
Really? Okay.
For a basement?
Yeah.
The accessory dwelling unit is supposed to be a separate dwelling unit, not an extension of the existing dwelling unit. And so that's why it needs to have its separate REU. Now, I know we have some discussions ongoing about, you know, the benefit fees and stuff like that, and this may get changed or stay the same as that comes along. But typically, you want, with an accessory dwelling that's attached, it to have a whole separate entrance. Granted, you can get from one to the other, but the doors be locked, things like that, between the units, so that it's essentially operating as its own dwelling unit, not a fifth bedroom or something like that. And that's why.
I have a problem with that if you're not changing anything inside the building. I mean, inside the already existing home, you're not adding bathrooms or bedrooms. You're just,
as opposed to putting a garage or
and putting a unit above it or something. Yeah, I could see if it was, you know, a new addition to a building. I guess I'm just not sure about the thought process there. So can either Mindy or Rick give me an idea?
Can I ask?
Well, essentially what I said, you know, it's not like, basically what you would be describing is a home addition. And this isn't a home addition. This is a separate dwelling unit that happens to be possibly a relative, or it could possibly not be a relative.
Right.
So if you're renting, go ahead.
Separate entrance.
Right. Has separate entrance and access.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting that you can't enter from the front of the house.
Right. Well,
facing the road. Like, really?
Well, that's because it's not supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be like a duplex.
It's not supposed to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I just
it's
thought
not supposed
it was
to be part
very
of the main
odd.
House. It's supposed to be secondary, for lack of a better
word. I just question the safety of, you know, you can't enter facing the road is all. But
I don't know. I mean, I think that actually makes a lot of sense, because if you did, you're getting more like a duplex effect, and this is supposed to be almost a marginal use of the primary. So I'm imagining
right.
We are talking like a bonus room over a garage, you know how they have mm-hmm. those a lot, or a basement with a separate entrance or something like
Think
that.
Think about where Fonzie lived above the Cunningham's garage.
It had an exterior stairway,
yeah.
Though.
That's why. The integrity of the appeal mm-hmm. of the neighborhood is to have it maintain the view of a single-family
right.
dwelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that most, what you're talking about, a room in a basement if somebody's just living in a bedroom, but most have got some kind of a kitchen facility attached to it, mm-hmm. which makes it technically a separate unit.
Right. As soon as you add that second kitchen, full kitchen, then you've got a second dwelling.
Microwave doesn't count.
Okay. So the owner who it has to be owner occupied
right.
and
mm-hmm.
have the PRE,
mm-hmm.
correct? But they can have anybody living in they can rent the space out.
Yes, it just can't be a short term.
Just can't be a short term under 30 days.
Right.
Could be a long term rental
mm-hmm.
though. Okay, because I'm thinking if we weren't allowing it, never mind. That's not the case. So I won't go down that road. Okay, I was looking at the general provisions with E removed. It looks like all of the rest are consistent with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just making sure that there wasn't anything else that we...
I mean, if in F, if you want to take the reference to within the growth boundary out, since we're only talking within the growth boundary, we can, but it just sort of reinforces that it has to be within the growth boundary.
Okay.
I can't believe we didn't catch that in the multitudes of iterations of looking at this thing. But
sometimes you just look at it
page, I don't know what page this is. Well, we're talking about the other sections that need to be changed and amended.
Mm-hmm.
So you got 4.1.1,
mm-hmm.
and it says 1 plus an accessory dwelling unit without community water and sewer.
Yeah.
And in 402.1, the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think you're going to have to clean that up a little.
Okay. You're good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess we will clean that up and bring it back to you with those removed. I think that's the best way to handle it. We'll go that's back all. Over it again.
Okay.
Yeah. One quick question just for clarification. This zoning ordinance amendment is 1-17. You guys haven't had any zoning amendments all year?
It's because it came to the Planning Commission originally in January, and then they postponed discussing it further until the short-term rentals were over, and then came.
Okay. That's fine.
I mean, now
it
that we're going in.
It was assigned at the beginning of the discussion.
It was the first thing we started working on in 2017.
Okay, so you assigned the number when you start, not right. after it's approved.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. So it looks like. Oh, go ahead.
I have a question.
Sure.
Parking. Mm-hmm. If there's already adequate parking, they don't need to add another one. How is that evaluated? Like we have.
I think the parking requirements, if I'm not mistaken, is if it's going to be an attached unit, they have to have one more additional off-street parking space. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be detached, too.
Okay. But if they already have that, then that's.
I guess we would have to determine that on a case-by-case basis.
Okay,
I mean, if they've got a huge, expansive parking area in
right.
their yard, then I suppose it might be a moot point because you're only required to have two per dwelling. So if they have enough blacktop for four vehicles, then they may not have to add additional ones. They just might have to stripe it or designate it or something.
Because not all dry parking areas are going to be blacktop. So.
True.
Okay. I just want to make sure that
they're not at my
house. Just saying.
Thank you.
Okay, so any other questions?
No, I will make. I apologize for those oversights when we were cutting and pasting from various iterations.
I apologize. I didn't point them out earlier. I should have, and you could have adjusted it.
Happy birthday. We don't care.
That's what happens when you get older.
He's showing his age.
We'll bring that back
onto
in January.
The next fiasco.
It's all good. It's all good. Let's. So if everyone's fine, we'll table that until the subsequent mm-hmm. meeting when Rick brings it back. Okay. That's again the short-term rental. That's a lot of work and
yep.
and effort on the Planning Commission's part and taking a look at it. So we really appreciate that. We'll move on to the added agenda item of the Michigan Association of Planning grant.
Back on the 5th of December, the Planning Commission recommended that we try to proceed with this. Just the week before that, we had gotten an email from Michigan Association of Planning offering up to four communities in... I don't quite get this how this group formed, but there's six counties, and they're Grand Traverse is one of them. And in those six counties, they're going to offer this technical assistance up to four communities, and it's basically to work on health-related planning. It's one of the fastest-growing areas of planning. It deals with issues such as aging in place,
mm-hmm.
like we were talking about right there with accessory dwelling units. Sedentary lifestyles, obesity, substance abuse, and other factors that are affecting the overall health of communities in the state of Michigan. And so they have offered these free technical assistant grants to communities. There will be no required outlay on our part. It will be strictly a technical assistance, no monetary grant, to help communities go through their current ordinances and plans and other documents and determine where they could be improved and strengthened and corrected to address issues of health planning. Basically, as I note in here, the assistance will include they will hold a planning for health workshop that will include members of staff, the Planning Commission, and the board. They will audit our master plan, our capital improvements plan, zoning ordinance, and other plans and policies on ways that they can we can improve health considerations in those. They'll identify some goals, priority health goals for the township, and then identify tangible actions that could be taken, and then help create an implementation strategy for these policies and these efforts, and then develop the necessary indicators that can be used so we can determine how successful we are once we've adopted those things. I don't know if it's counting the number of people riding bikes that day or what it will be, but you know, it could be a variety of things. You know, it could be you know, adopting additional ordinances. It could be additional people out walking or biking. It can be perhaps other types of health-related things, obesity rates dropping in the community, getting more people out and active, maybe substance abuse problems dropping, a variety of factors they could possibly utilize in that. I don't know what all of them would be at this point in time, but they are interested in providing this technical assistance to communities, and staff and the supervisor talked about it. We thought it was something worthwhile to bring to the Planning Commission. They recommended we seek approval from the board, and so we provided a resolution for you to consider approving us requesting this and seeing if we can get this technical assistance from them in 2018.
So this is just for four communities we'll be awarded this?
Up to four communities. Up to four. And that's not throughout the state. That's in six specific counties and a few tribal areas as well.
So. Does anyone have questions for Rick on this opportunity? So Rick brought this just before the Planning Commission date, mentioned to me that he, you know, of this opportunity and talked a little bit about it, and I said, is this something you want to do? And he said, yeah, I think that this would be beneficial if we can get in on this. He would be interested in pursuing that. There's a lot of goals that are appropriate that we're seeing, as we mentioned, like the aging in place and those things, trail support. So I told him go for it, and he took it to the Planning Commission. They were supportive of that, and so now it is here at the board. So we have the resolution in front of you, 2017-31, approving the submittal of it, of that grant.
Question. How long is the grant for? And
it will be done by the end of 2018. I think the end date is September. Yeah.
September?
Yeah.
Now, if you guys have got enough time to be able to go through all this, then...
Yeah. The actual requirements of staff are more information gathering for them and then attending some of these sessions. Okay. They're going to be doing most of the legwork.
Is there any kind of matching or in-kind that needs to go with this at all?
No.
Any community?
Not other than attendance at the events and providing the information. That was one of the nice things about it.
So your program expectations are in page 3 of 3 of the map information. Okay. Any other questions? Is there a motion to move forward with this by endorsing resolution 2017-31?
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2017-31, the resolution approving the submittal of an application for a Michigan Association of Planning Technical Assistance Grant.
Support.
Okay.
Whenever she does that.
Motion's been made and supported. Further discussion? And we'll do a roll call vote.
Walters?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I apologize for the typos in the other, and we'll have it back to you for next month's meeting.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens on your 61st birthday. All right. Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Be careful on the roads. Assessing. We have agenda item number 6, which is two items from assessing. Susan Kerkos is here. And Susan, why don't you just have a seat at the table there? We've got a microphone there. Make yourself comfortable. So we have two items here. We have a property transfer affidavit and the poverty exemption. I'll let Susan go over both of these, but I do want to note that poverty exemption, we saw that back in, I think it was like June or July. No, it must have been after the summer Board of Review, but it was sometime this summer, and then tabled it. I think we had two board members with questions that were basically related to the amount of the assets, and so we went back and took a look at that, but we'll address that when we're going over. You want to hit the property transfer affidavit first?
Well, the resolution is to waive the $200 up to $200 fee for not filing a property transfer affidavit. The requirement is that you have to file a property transfer affidavit any time there is an uncapping of the taxable value. Any time there's an uncapping of the taxable value is usually a purchase transaction or a transfer between non-related parties for whatever reason that they may do that. 99% of them is a purchase transaction. Those are completed by the title company as part of their closing process. So you're going to get those. The others that might and should file but aren't required to are the list of exemptions on the property transfer. So if you're transferring it into your trust or if you're transferring the property from your a parent to a child, those are exemptions that should not have to uncap. But if you don't file a property transfer affidavit, there are assessors out there that will go ahead and uncap it anyway. That's not done in this office, but I have heard where that's been done across the state. So it's in their best interest to file those forms to make sure that they are notifying the assessor that this property should not be uncapped, and here's the reason why. As far as the fee goes, that's something the state came up with. That they could charge $5 a day up to $200 for each parcel. And if Tracy had to chase that money down, that would just increase her collection costs anyway. So,
and our budget would go up.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you can collect it on the tax bill or if you had to bill them separately.
I'd have to go back and look, but I believe we can collect it on the tax bill. But we in East Bay have not ever done, at least since I've been here, I should say. When I first came, someone from the equalization office was maintaining, tracking those down, and even at that point, we still weren't charging. But since Susan has taken and Russ have taken over, they're very, very diligent about tracking that down. So very rarely do we even get to a point where we have a difficulty getting that transfer affidavit done. So
yeah, I do mail out up to two letters if I don't get a response back by that point. Because 99% of the time, when you're looking at a deed, you know what they're doing. You can tell that they're putting it into their trust. The ones where it's a little tougher is you're not sure if they are, in fact, deeding it to a child.
Right.
It could be deeding it to a second cousin or somebody they're not even related to. That's where gathering that kind of information to help them save on their tax bill would be beneficial. So those I do try to get a hold of pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When two private individuals transfer a property, one buys a chunk from another person, does not use a real estate, do you not get a copy of all the, because they got to register it, do you not get a copy of all the ones that are registered even if they didn't come in and do the transfer?
The most of the times, if they're doing it privately and not using a title company, there's going to be an attorney involved. The local attorneys are aware that they need to file those. I've talked to enough of them over the last 10 years to hammered at home.
I think what you were alluding to is through the Register of Deeds we get a new...
Yeah, there's nothing through the Register of Deeds as far as a property transfer affidavit.
But you get a deed, a new deed recording.
Right, but again,
right.
John Doe to Jane Smith, we don't know if there's a relationship there.
Right.
So if the relationship is not spelled out in that deed, that's an uncapping.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you just automatically uncap it if it's not... Okay.
Yeah. But if it's John Doe to Jane Doe, there's probably a relationship there, and I'm going to try and get something from them to save them that uncapping. Because I don't want to have to recap it later.
Right.
Susan, would you talk a little bit about the AMAR? And, you know, it's important to have a lot of these things cleaned up when we're...
this is going to be on there... one of their focuses for this year's audit, and we are on Grand Traverse County, and East Bay will be audited this 2018. And so this is one of the things that they wanted to see. Are we collecting the $200? And if not, why not?
And do you have the resolution in place?
Right.
So the AMAR, again, is an acronym for assessing...
So
AMAR is short an acronym for something with assessing, where they...
It's an audit.
It's an audit.
It's assessing Michigan...
actual real estate?
No.
Literally, every place I've ever seen it is the AMAR.
AMAR, yeah.
So, they forgot.
So I probably read it someplace one time, but I don't recall. But basically, you just want to go through a series of things and make sure you're doing best practices, and they audit for that. And so this is one of those things that we want to make sure that we have taken care of.
There's a movie called AMAR.
Okay.
Should Google it.
Yeah, if you go to Michigan.gov and then AMAR, you could probably get it that way.
Totally Googling that. I am, so right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Are you ready for a motion?
Pretty sure the last one's requirements, but assessing.
So are there any other questions regarding the penalties, the waiving the collection of penalties for failure to file the property transfer affidavits? For Susan, any other questions or a motion regarding the resolution?
I'd make a motion to approve Resolution 2017-30, waiving collection of penalty for failure to file a property transfer affidavit.
Is there support for that?
Support.
Okay. And you can flip a coin between Lyle and Walters. there's support for that. Any further discussion?
Audit of minimum assessing requirements.
Thank you. That's where we're getting thrown off. It wasn't assessing to start, it was the audit to start.
I had the last word right.
We were putting way too much thought into it.
Yeah. We'll do a roll call.
Good thing it's not on one of my tests.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
Mitchell.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Brent.
Yes. Okay, next we have the property tax exemption before you. This is another one of those things with AMAR as well. This is a while ago now. The Board of Review took a look at this. We just updated the resolution and the exemption guidelines and asset test, and we did it in a way so that it's passed once and we can just update the associated table with it. Instead of coming, the attachment A will be updated every year with the federal poverty guidelines. The established difference between that East Bay has will stay the same. As you can see on that first cover sheet, this is exactly what I gave you at the earlier meeting. The differences really are all, this is all template and terminology, but the core differences from the current. The income guidelines, we're still recommending the $3,000 over the federal poverty guideline. The asset test, that is recommended to be changed from 5 times the annual household income to 3 times the annual household income. Did discuss that with the Board of Review members and the assessing staff. That was a discussion at the Board of Review. You have the minutes in there. And I think that the questions last time were related to, if a person has their home and their assets, their accumulation of assets, could easily be three times that.
Does not include their home.
That's the distinction that I didn't make at the last meeting. So, for example, I think, Andrew, we went back and watched the meeting, and you had mentioned, you know, if a child inherited from the parents, and you're not necessarily considered a wealthy family, but, you know, your home is your largest investment, then you could easily exceed that three times. But the difference is that it doesn't include your home. So it's literally your assets, your bank accounts, your car, your that sort of thing.
My question is, the federal guideline is five times. Am I correct?
No. There's no federal guideline for
what
the
is the oh the current value of assets?
Yeah, that's the township. That's just the township's established.
So the federal doesn't have a guideline for.
No, there's no federal property tax exemption.
Okay.
That's just a local.
So is. I guess I'm trying to understand. Are there lots of people accessing this exemption? Is that why we're making it more stringent?
No, we only had one this year.
Okay.
So then what she's saying is, what's the need that the discussion that we had at the Board of Review level that made us choose to notch it down to three times versus five times?
Yeah.
That was what the Board of Review, and I don't have any control over the Board of Review, but they felt that five was more than generous. Three would be better. Trying to just tighten it up a little bit. You're already giving them $3,000 over. So the federal for, let's say, a family of two is, or let's say a family of four, federal is how much for income?
Well, you're actually, your poverty guideline, a federal is about $25,000. Ours is close to $28,000.
So if you take 28 times three, they can have up to $75,000 in assets,
or just over, so somewhere around $80,000. So basically, when you have somebody come in seeking a poverty exemption, and since their assets do not include the home,
they can have three vehicles. They could have a couple of snowmobiles. They could have a motorhome sitting out there and a boat.
Now, by the state, a township is able to regulate that asset. List through, we're given the ability to do that. So you could literally say you're only allowed to have one car, okay? Or in your asset group has to be, oh gosh, they have a list, okay? So you can designate what's included or not included in that. The township, as far as I can tell, previous and currently going forward, doesn't necessarily have an interest in chopping it up to that level of detail, and so they're solely going with a times the income amount. But you can get very detailed. I was at a session last year where they were talking about townships. You know, there were some boards, I guess Board of Review and Township Board, that were interested in, look, you can't own more than one vehicle, or your vehicle can't be worth more than $20,000, those types of things. You can get that specific. Again, the township hasn't chosen to, but so.
The township is actually being very generous. I mean, if you're looking at $72,000 in assets, that's a lot of assets.
Because they're being asked, they're asking not to pay their property taxes. And so you want to demonstrate a level of poverty, because every other family out there or property tax owner is making it a priority to fund their property taxes. So you want to make sure that it is truly
a hardship,
exactly. And so
how are trusts impacted by this as an asset?
If the property's in a trust, it's still considered their primary residence, they're fine. If they have other trust assets, then they should be reporting that on that application, and then that would have to be looked at by the Board of Review.
I thought a trust isn't owned by anybody. The assets in a trust aren't any particular person's.
For real estate property, though.
Yeah.
The property is owned by the trust. They are the beneficiaries of that trust. So a trust and individuals can still own property. They're still considered their primary residence.
Right. I'm talking about the assets that aren't the home.
Right. But they should be listing those on that application if they have any other trust within or any other assets within that trust. So other properties, there might be other properties that they own. I don't deal too much with trusts themselves as far as bank accounts and all that kind of stuff. I'm strictly looking at the real estate property for that trust. But yeah, they could have all kinds of stuff in that trust.
I don't think we in the last 12 years, I don't think we had more than two at the most that came in for it.
Two or three.
The one thing is, though, like Beth was saying, you know, if you give somebody this exemption, that means they're not paying for emergency services. So then the rest of the residents have to make up the difference because Metro is funded on an amount. So they're going to have to be, somebody else going to have to pay more. So they're pretty cautious with it.
Where you were asking about the federal, what we do is use the federal poverty guidelines for, you know, a person or the household size. And then you could just leave it at the federal poverty level. You cannot go below it. As a township, you can set it higher, so you're giving more latitude. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the township is doing by adding, I think it's $3,000 for each level. Mm-hmm. Again, so if you're going back to a family of four having, close to $80,000 in assets, again, that doesn't include their home. That's pretty significant, again, to be asking the Board of Review is supposed to be your peers, your taxpaying peers, really. And so you're asking those peers to forego your paying property taxes.
I'm running numbers for individuals that I know that are disabled, may or may not have a trust, and if their trust is viewed as an asset outside of their home, and if they have a separate one, someone that is fully disabled only makes $704 a month. If they have a home that's worth $150,000 that they've inherited, their taxes are going to be ballpark at say $2,000.
Yeah.
That takes up more than 2 months of their.
But see, their home's not included in the home.
I know this. But federal limits for what disabled people can have in retained assets and trusts went up.
So a person, it's still their home. That's not, that dollar amount of their home is not included. If they have real estate in that trust other than their primary resident, then they probably would not qualify for the exemption.
I'm following you.
I'm not.
But they're still under this. Okay.
So they make less, so they would qualify for the exemption based on their income. But you're saying because they have larger assets, they would.
But it's inaccessible. It's controlled, but yet it shoots them over the asset with a 3x limit.
But here's the thing: then are they considered poverty level? That's the question.
That is the question. That's the question is why I'm asking it based on the rubric that you provided.
I mean, so you're saying this was an instance of disabled, correct?
I am saying in all other guise, if you have individuals that are unable due to medical, physical, intellectual circumstances, that they are not able to be fortuitous enough to have gainful employment to pull themselves out of poverty, but they have had parents or caregivers that have done a good job of laying assets aside for them, whether it's fully functioning all through one trust or several.
They can't be a beneficiary of the trust.
Right. They're not going to be able to be.
But if their parents have done all that, then they probably wouldn't qualify for the exemption.
Because this isn't...
But it's taking 2.5 months of their income to pay their property taxes.
Right, but I totally see where you're at.
I'm just laying it out there.
Here's the... I mean, I understand what
you're saying. I don't understand why we would want to make it more stringent on someone to change something that hasn't even been a historical issue.
You do have people come to the Board of Review who have assets. We do have one this year who have assets that would...
We'll see if we pass it tomorrow.
Right. So, yes, I mean, this has come
you
to
gotta,
the Board
you
of
You've got to look at it, too. Is it a hardship temporary? Is it 1 year because they had health problems or whatever? Or is it something that they did
or didn't
do that put them in this situation in the first place? Should you be able to buy a piece of property and then just not pay your property taxes for 3 years and get a poverty exemption because you didn't pay your taxes for 3 years? And now they've tripled because the interest rate at the county treasurer's office is 24% a month.
No, I'm not referring to individuals that have the ability to render their circumstances in a different way. I'm talking about individuals that have not had that opportunity or don't have the ability.
And it's probably a non-issue.
I mean, for example, there's the poverty exemption, and then there's the veterans exemption.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different things. We could have the same if there weren't the veterans exemption, we could have the same thing. A veteran has very limited income but might have some assets. I mean, this specific thing is solely related to income and assets, not the situation that they find themselves in. Mm-hmm. For example, a veteran, a disabled individual. And I don't mean that's not in any way intended to be heartless. I'm just saying that's what this policy is specifically for, is for income and asset tests.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. The case that's coming before the board, whatever it is, would this change their...
The one I was thinking of for tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. She has found the funds to pay the taxes, the back taxes for.
Okay.
So it's going to be not an issue for us tomorrow.
Okay. So really, though, what we need to have in place is a resolution on the property tax poverty exemption and the guideline and asset test, right. Now we can change those parameters from what the Board of Review had recommended, but regardless, we need to have those in place for the AMR. Is there further discussion or a motion?
I guess I would make a motion to approve the recommendation from the Board of Review for your poverty exemption.
So that would be then a motion to approve the resolution 2017. 30.
There's
30. Are we in 32?
Yes.
32. And the associated exemption guidelines and asset test.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the right page. See, I don't have the right page here, but yes.
Okay. Is there support for that motion?
I would support it.
Motion has been made and supported. Further discussion? It's a resolution. Roll call vote, Ann.
Lyle?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Henschel?
No.
Merrill?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay, Susan, thanks for coming tonight and staying here to this late date. Be careful going home.
I will, thank you.
Okay. Let's see, we have two added items. They should be relatively quick. Oh, you know what, Susan? You might stay just another half a second on this road issue, on the road naming. The first one is surplus equipment. This is basically when we were carpeting, we were looking at things that were being used or not used, and one of them was the old printer that was replaced that had been in assessing. It was not being used anymore. I think that they were trying to use it at the beginning, and it needed repair and parts or something like that.
Continuously.
Yeah. So I asked Val to check into it. As you can see, she sent me an email that said it is no longer usable for the office. She checked with the company. Parts aren't being made for the model, and they were advised. We were advised not to keep fixing it. I'm not sure how we would even fix it if the parts aren't available. But you see what she's getting at. So just wanted to bring this to the township board with respect to the disposal of the township equipment policy.
Any idea how you'd get rid of it? Put it on governor's or government surplus?
Yeah,
governor's
actually,
desk.
Actually, no. As a matter of fact, I was hoping that Val was hoping that she would have a recommendation for you with this, so we would know. And I said, let's just get it before him, so that we can take care of it this next month, because I think the policy says you can whatever. But which she initially talked with the company, they said that they have. You almost can't get rid of them, and
you have to beg people to take it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they do have something where they'll take it back, and I don't even think that they.
I don't think they refurbish them. I think they use
scrap them. Or
yeah, they scrap them. And
yeah.
They give you anything for it?
No.
Mm-hmm. No. As a matter of fact, it's a selling or it's an advantageous point that they don't charge you
to take
like,
it.
Well, we can take it back, and we won't charge you. I'm thinking.
Okay.
So, but we don't know. We're going to check some more into it and see, you know, if that's really the only option that there is.
I mean, there's no cost to put it on that government surplus. If you got $10 for it, you're $10 ahead if you didn't have to pay anything.
Except for the time. But we'll definitely take a look at the different options to do that. But I do want to. Yeah, you could. Hey, as you know, obviously that's how we sold the ambulance recently. So, anyway, it went to Pennsylvania. Did I tell you? I did mention that to you guys. Yeah, company that refurbishes them. So, anyway, is there a motion or further discussion on declaring this Monotel 500 Biz Hub?
I move to approve the recommendation to declare the Monotel 500 Biz Hub as surplus equipment and dispose of per the disposal of township equipment policy.
Okay, is there support for that motion?
Support.
Motion's been made and supported. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed by no? Okay, thank you. The next thing is road name. To be honest, I really don't know any further information other than what's on these two sheets. Apparently we have a... Do you know any further information on this road naming?
I think that's three parcels, two that sit on Main Road.
Can you go up to the mic? Sorry. Somebody watching this tomorrow won't be able to hear you.
He has... three parcels, two sit on the main road, one sits at the back. There's an easement that runs back there for the rear parcel, and he just wants to have a road name for it.
Is that Loci Ridge? That's
the name of the road that he wants to put in.
Yeah. RDG is Ridge?
Yes.
Okay.
Where is it?
I want to say it's off of Peninsula Trail.
No? Okay, because I'm looking on here, and I'm like, okay, this does not tell me where it is. Okay.
I think I'm pretty sure it's off the trail.
Okay, then. All right.
Mischief.
Do we have a motion from the township board regarding the naming of Loci Ridge?
Loki.
I would have said Loki.
It's Loki. Yeah.
Loki.
You know, Loki. The next road over is going to be Thor. And
it's Game of Thrones or something? No, what is that? See how far out I am?
Okay, we're almost there, people. Let's go.
Okay, I make a motion that we approve the requested road name to Loki Ridge.
Okay, I will support that. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? By no. Okay, that motion passes. My goodness, Carol. Thank you, Susan, very much. Carol, you are very patient. You must.
Asking for a statement.
You know, well, as,
I was gonna say, you
as are. A mom, sometimes sitting back there is.
It's actually kind of peaceful. It's really not that bad.
Kind of peaceful, and you know someone else is, you know,
you're
finishing up the dinner dishes at home. Exactly.
No, they're all at Scouts, I think.
Okay. Yeah, well, they are. It's, yeah,
they are
right.
At Scouts. Right? Yes.
Okay. So what's going on?
It's kind of been a few weeks since I've been here. I'm going to hit the highlights. We do have a balanced budget that was approved early in November as opposed to late in December, so we were excited for that. Especially with our incoming new administrator. So I thought that was a big win. Several weeks ago, we also approved the Brownfield project called Envision, which is going to be there at the end of Boardman, right near the governmental center, right on the river. On January 3rd, we will welcome back our former finance director, Dean Bott. We're very grateful that he has agreed to come back. And be our finance director again. So we're very excited about that. This Wednesday we have a study session, so no decisions will be made. But administration wanted to get our opinion on what to do with the Lafreniere property. We have a huge piece of property up on Lafreniere, kind of between the health department, the Department of Public Works, and then almost all the way to the end of the road. We have had a request from Community Mental Health that they might like to build a new facility up there. We also, some of our commissioners had thoughts on maybe jail and law enforcement center, so we'll kind of talk about lots of options to use that nice big piece of property. We'll also get an update from the TART trails on the Boardman Lake Loop improvements. There's some improvements going on at Medalli Park. Some things, very good things. This is a feel-good thing about what's going on with the trails. And we're also going to talk about changing our board rules, possibly to change our meeting structure. We've had some really marathon meetings, almost 5 hours at times. So we're thinking maybe at the beginning of the year we might go to 3 meetings and 1 study session. We'll see how the rest of the board feels about that. So just kind of getting ahead of changing our board rules the first thing in January. So.
Okay.
Any questions or anything?
Any questions?
No.
All right. Good luck in 2018.
Thank you. On a personal note, thank you very much for the card.
Absolutely.
When my mother passed away, that was very kind.
Absolutely.
Very
kind.
So, thank you. Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas.
You too.
Okay. Now is the time for public comment to address the board. It's our second opportunity. If you'd like to address the board, come on up and introduce yourself. And I am going to pick on 2 students. So if you'll come up and introduce yourself, because what you can do is then you can tell your teacher you made it to the very end of a township board meeting. Not everyone can. Look around you.
Yeah, they don't want to.
You don't want to. Could you pan over to the audience here and show the students who have been diligently watching and are aware of every resolution that we have just passed? What number were we on? 32?
32.
I'm just kidding.
But we'll sign we'll sign your forms too for you.
Absolutely. No. Sincerely, we thank you for coming. Are you with a history or a government class? Government class? Okay. So what you might not realize until you're a little bit older, and I'm old, so I can tell you not as old as Rick Brown, who was here earlier. But that local government truly does impact you. All of us here know that. And it's good to know how to affect change in your community, and your local township is one way that you can do that. Not every state has townships. Several do. But a county government, township government, city government, it's important to know how you seek change. You know, whether you become formally involved, whether you volunteer, or whether you're a resident that contacts with some information that things need to be altered. So it's important to know, and it's a good thing that your teacher sent you here, believe it or not. So with that, we'll close the meeting. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a good evening. Drive safely home.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.